Chapter 4. As soon as the words left Alan's mouth, the captain showed his face at the open door. "Stand fast!" Alan cried, as he pointed his sword at the captain. Hoseason didn't wince, or seem to be afraid of the Jacobite. "Drawing your sword is a strange return for hospitality," the captain replied, as he stood there, sounding and looking perfectly calm. "Do you see me? I come from a line of kings. I bear the name of King, and my badge is oak. My sword has cut the heads of more Whigamores than you have toes on your feet. Call your men, sir, and fall on. The sooner we begin this, the sooner you will all be dead," Alan said with zeal. The captain said nothing to Alan, but instead he looked at me angrily and said, "David, I won't forget this." Then he left. "Be ready. Your life is in your own hands now," Alan said to me, as he drew a dirk from his belt and held it in his left hand. Just in case any one of the crew should run under his sword, I took all the pistols I had loaded, some extra shot and powder, and climbed into my berth. From there, I could watch the door and the skylight, and I was certain to stay out of the way of Alan's sword. The ship seemed to be eerily still as I waited for the crew of the ship to attack. It was so quiet that I was sure that I could hear the muttering of voices being carried on the wind. After a while of waiting, I heard the sound of metal scraping on metal, the sound of the crew all drawing their cutlasses. But then, all was still again. The battle began very suddenly with the rush of feet and a roar. Alan gave a shout, and there was the sound of swords clashing and someone crying out as if they had been hurt. I looked over my shoulder and saw Alan fighting with Mr. Sean. "That's the man who killed the boy," I cried out. But Alan was not happy that I was looking at him instead of the door I was guarding. He yelled at me as he ran his sword through Mr. Sean's body. I turned back to where I was supposed to be looking. The moment I looked back through the window, five men carrying a spare yardarm as a battering ram came running at the door. I had never fired a pistol before in my life, but I took the first pistol, aimed at the men, and fired. I must have hit one of them as I heard one of them cry. The rest had all stopped before they reached the door. I fired the next pistol, which went over their heads, and by the time I fired the third pistol, the men had dropped the battering ram and run for it. The roundhouse was full of smoke from the pistols I had just fired. Alan was standing in the doorway with his sword covered in blood. He looked like he was invincible. Mr. Sean was on his knees in front of Alan, shaking, with blood pouring from his mouth. Hands came from outside the roundhouse to drag him back, but he died as they dragged him. I reloaded three pistols I had fired and waited for the next attack to come. The men came at Alan again, but no one tried to break through the barred door. I thought that my part in my fight was over, but then I heard the sound of feet near the skylight above us. Someone blew a horn, and men rushed in a group at Alan as another leapt through the skylight and landed on the floor in front of me. As he landed, I put my pistol against his back and fired. Another man had his legs dangling through the skylight and kicked me in the head. As I fell back, I picked up another pistol and shot the man through the leg. This caused him to fall through the skylight and land on the body of the other. I didn't wait for him to get up. I put my gun to his head and shot him. I could have stood there for hours looking at the bodies, but Alan gave a shout as though he needed help. Alan had held the door for a long time, but with so many men attacking all at once, one of the men had gotten under his sword and stabbed Alan in the body. Alan had used his dirk to kill the man, but another was coming in with cutlass drawn behind him. I picked up my cutlass and rushed to help Alan. I didn't have time to help, though, as Alan was ready. He rushed at the men trying to force their way into the roundhouse, and the crew gave up and ran. Alan moved so quickly that I couldn't tell who he cut, but the sound of screaming told me each time he did. I thought we had lost for a moment, but then the men were fleeing, and Alan was chasing them across the deck of the ship like a dog chases sheep. But as quickly as he left the roundhouse, he was back again. He was as cautious as he was brave, and yet the crew were running and crying across the ship as though he was still chasing them. We had beaten the crew, and both were mostly unhurt. "Come to my arms," Alan shouted to me. I ran to him and embraced him. "David, I love you like a brother," he said. before he stabbed the four bodies in the roundhouse with his sword and threw them out of the door onto the deck. Alan had killed Mr. Sean and five other men. I had killed the two men that had come through the skylight, and four others were hurt, which left the captain. I now sat on my berth and began to cry. It was the effect of the adrenaline and the shock of killing two men. "You're a brave lad. You just need some sleep." "I'll take first watch," Alan told me, as he clapped his hand on my shoulder. I slept for 3 hours before Alan woke me, so that I could take my turn at watching the door. Then it was day again, and heavy rain beat down upon the ship, washing the blood off the deck. The ship lurched on the waves as no one was sailing it. Instead, they were sitting outside watching the roundhouse. The sound of gulls flying around the ship told me that we were close to the coast of Skye. Out of the windows on the ship, I could see the great stone hills of Skye on my right and the strange Isle of Rum astern. Alan and I had breakfast amongst the broken glass and blood on the floor. We had the fine bread and pickles that were stored in the roundhouse to eat, and all the wine and spirits that were in there too. The crew had only water. We had just finished breakfast when Mr. Riak called out to us from the deck. He wanted to talk to us. I climbed up through the skylight with a pistol in my hand and called back to him. "This is a bad job," Mr. Riak called out, shaking his head. "It was not us that chose this," I replied. "The captain would like to talk to your friend through the window," Mr. Riak told me. "And how do we know that he isn't plotting some new treachery?" I asked. "He has no treachery planned. If he did, we couldn't get the men to stay," Mr. Riak replied. I went back down into the roundhouse to talk to Alan. Everything was arranged, and the captain came to the window to talk to Alan. The captain's arm was in a sling, and he looked stern and pale as he stood in the rain. "We don't have enough men to sail the ship. We must go to the port of Glasgow. After we get there, we will be able to talk," he said. "And I will have a tale to tell the people of Glasgow about how one man and a boy beat 15 thieves and murderers." "What a pitiful crew you were," Alan replied. "Put us ashore now, or I will tell the story of this ship to every man in Glasgow that can listen." The captain tried to tell us that he couldn't sail the ship with so few men, and when that failed, he turned to asking for money for doing it. Eventually, the captain agreed to take Alan and I to Linny Lock, and we traded some water for some food and spirits for the crew that remained. We used the water to wash the blood and glass from the floor of the roundhouse. While the ship sailed to the Linny Lock, Alan and I told each other the stories of our lives. I found out that Alan had once been in the English army, but had deserted and now carried a commission in the King of France's army. He lived in France, but came back to Scotland every year because he missed his family and his country. He came on the business of his clan, Appin, and the captain of his clan, Ardshiel. He had lied to Captain Hoseason about the rents that his people paid. In truth, they paid two rents, one to the king and one to Ardshiel, or rather to James Stuart, Ardshiel's half-brother. It was James Stuart that took care of the people. He told me of the feud with the Campbells and the legend of the Red Fox, the red-headed Colin of Glenure, a Campbell who went to the king to hold the lands of Appin in the name of the king. At first, he was fair with the people. When he found out that the people were sending a second rent to Ardshiel and his family in France, he threw all the people off their farms and out of their homes. He tried to rent them to men who were loyal to the king. The people offered to pay him more, and he is still not beaten, but I will have my vengeance on him, Alan told me. He continued the tale and told me about how the Red Fox then went to the lawyers and the Redcoats to drive the people from their lands. The Red Fox wanted Ardshiel to starve, so he not only went after the farmers, but all the people in every house in Appin. But if the king gave him the orders, then it's not the fault of the Red Fox if he is just following them. If you killed him tomorrow, how would it help the people that he is hurt? I replied. You're good in a fight, but what a whigamore you are, Alan tried to say kindly. But it was clear that he was angry and treating my opinion with contempt. I thought it was best to change the subject of the conversation, so I began to talk about how it was that the Highlands had become so covered with troops. It's easier than you think. A bare hillside is like one road. If there is a sentry on one, you go to the next where there isn't one. And the heather is a great help for sneaking across the Highlands. When people talk of a country covered with soldiers, it's a byword at best. A soldier only covers the part of a country that his boot soles cover. I have fished a river with a sentry standing on the other side of a bush and sat in a bush of heather 6 feet from another and learned a rather good song from his whistling. The king thinks that the Highlands are now pacified, but that is only because the king has taken every sword and gun from the people that he can, except what people have hidden in the thatch of their roofs. But how long do you think a man like the Red Fox can sit in wine and oppress the poor with men like Ardshiel in exile? It's a little thing to decide how much people will put up with. Who is to say that tomorrow a young girl shoots the Red Fox as he rides past on his horse, Alan asked, and fell into a musing state for quite a time. We sat in silence while he thought. Alan was a good man, as far as I could see. He could play many different types of music. He could read French and English. He was a good angler and a good shot. On top of this, he was an excellent fencer, with a small sword as well as the sword he had used to cut down the crew of the ship. He liked to pick fights and easily took offence to things. But he laid a lot of this aside for me for helping him fight in the roundhouse. Whether it was because I had done well for myself, or because I was there to witness just how good he was with a sword against so many foes, I didn't know. For although there were a great many men that I had seen with a great taste of courage in them, I admired it most in Alan Breck.